Jocelyn served in the U.S. Navy for 12 years. She was honorably discharged as an E-6 or Petty Officer First Class. What she loved most about the Navy was the travel, excitement, and the camaraderie with other sailors. Jocelyn's rate, aka job, was an aviation electrician. She was stationed in Whitney Island, Washington, and Jacksonville, Florida. She also did 3 deployments, 2 to Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean, and 1 to Misawa, Japan. She is now a financial planner and a business owner. Hello everyone, and welcome to Ghost Turd Stories. I'm your host, Troy Gent. Ghost Turd Stories' mission is using humorous and challenging stories from veterans and first responders to reduce the burden of families whose veteran or first responder took their own life. Ghost Turd Stories' vision is to use humorous and challenging stories to prevent suicide within our ranks and reduce the burden of families whose veteran or first responder took their own life. We hope to attract veterans and first responders, as well as those interested in knowing more about what it's like to be in our shoes while we wear or wore those shoes. At Ghost Turd Stories, we tell and write the stories of veterans and first responders for their families and friends. We love storytelling and believe there is nothing more inspiring and nothing that gets people to take action like a great story. Families and friends want to know the sacrifices we made, the services we rendered, and the people we lifted, so they can be inspired and learn about the legacy we left. Our podcast is the face of our company, but we want every family who cares to know about the experiences their veteran and or first responder went through for them. We interview veterans and first responders, collect pictures, write their stories, and compile them in a book for their families and friends to enjoy. Oftentimes, it's difficult for us to talk to our loved ones about what we did, saw, and heard while serving. At Ghost Turd Stories, we bridge the gap. For pricing, visit linktr.ee/ghostturdstories and click on the second tab directly under the podcast link called Let Us Write Your Story. That's linktr.ee/ghostturdstories. So welcome, Jocelyn. It's good to have you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your service experience and how you got recruited, and then just a short rundown of your service.
I had graduated from college and I wanted to do something big. You know, I didn't want to just hang out here in St. George and just not do anything. So I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, but I had moved to Salt Lake and I'd been there for a year. My friend went on vacation to Hawaii and she had met some Army guys there. And she's like, hey, I think I want to move to Hawaii. And at that time, it was June up in Salt Lake, and I looked at the mountains, and there was still snow on them. And I was like, that sounds like a really good idea. Yeah. So I just said, yeah, let's move to Hawaii. So we moved to Hawaii, and then we kind of hung out with these Army guys quite a bit. And then she's like, I think I'm going to talk to the recruiters. I'm like, okay, I'll talk to the recruiters, too. I wanted to, like I said, do something big with my life. And then I decided, okay, maybe I'll join the Army. But they didn't quite give me what I wanted. I wanted to be a parachute rigger.
Okay.
But I only wanted to join the Army for 3 years. If they were going to make me do 4, then I was going to join the Navy or Air Force. They said it was a 4-year enlistment. So I was like, okay, forget that. But then I went to Pearl Harbor. Have you been there?
No, I've lived in Hawaii, but I never
went to Pearl Harbor. You never went? Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah,
oh, I should have. Yeah, you need to go. It was really emotional. And I was just there by myself, which kind of made it a different experience, I feel like. So my friend didn't want to go. She'd already been there. And I walked out and there was this big anchor as you walk out the doors. And I looked at the anchor and it was kind of like, I always say it's like the heavens opened up. Like, oh, you know? And I was like, yeah, I'm joining the Navy. So I did. And that's how that happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you served for 12 years, 5 years you were active, and 7 years you were in the reserves. Where was the reserve unit at?
I was a reservist in Jacksonville, Florida, and then here, or I went to Las Vegas, and then I moved to California with my now ex for a little bit, and then I drilled in Coronado, then we split up, got divorced, I moved back here, and then I drill in Vegas, just because it's the only thing I could really make work on the weekends.
So Vegas has a unit?
Kind of. It's, you don't really do that much while you're there, so it's kind of lame, but it was the only thing I could make work, because I was working a full-time job, and I had the kids, and it's like, but I would meet my ex in Baker, because he was still living in California, so we would meet, and then I'd go drill, then we'd meet again, and then I'd drive home.
So they were still really, the kids
they were still really long days, but yeah.
You mentioned that basic training was really cold.
Yeah.
And go ahead and explain some things about basic that you didn't particularly enjoy, or some of the ridiculous antics that went on.
So we affectionately in the Navy still call it boot camp.
Okay.
You know, we have a lot of our slings. It technically is called basic training, but most people do call
Thanks for educating me.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, that's like if you're learning a foreign language and you know the technical words, but you know,
I usually look it up. If I got a question,
most people do call it boot camp, but you know, the Navy has a lot of old words and old traditions that we hang on to. But yeah, I went from November 10th to December 23rd. I mean, January 23rd.
Okay, yeah,
I thought I heard that. So okay. Great Lakes, Illinois. I literally spent the first 2 weeks plotting my escape. I would lay awake at night and think, I gotta get out of here. How can I get past everybody? And I didn't sleep much at all for 2 weeks.
Because your mind was too busy?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then finally, I just gave up on that idea. I was like, I don't see how I can get out of here.
Plus, did it all stay in your mind, or did you actually make any sort of...
No, I gave up on the idea after about 2 weeks.
Okay.
At that time, you remember the song Creed, My Own Prison?
Yeah.
That song just kept playing in my head. I created my own prison. I was like, why did I do this? Why did I join? It's funny because like, you know what it'll be like. But when you're actually there and you kind of see the effect that it has on you, then you are like, why did I do this? But, you know, then I finally kind of started to get into the rhythm of things a little bit. But yeah, as far as the antics, sleep deprivation, I probably had it worse than most people since I spent 2 weeks barely sleeping.
Yourself?
So then I had eight more weeks of, you know, sleep deprivation on top of it. So that was really the worst part for me. Because, you know, you'd have classes and stuff, and then you can't sleep. It's like, oh, you better not sleep. Yeah. That's not good. And I'd even stand up. It's okay to stand up, right? But I'd still be falling asleep standing up, and it didn't seem to matter what I did. I mean, I fell asleep. I was kind of falling asleep marching.
Yeah.
You know?
I fell asleep hiking once.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. That's pretty bad. But the antics, a few things they did, they said that the pipes were frozen and they turned down the water pressure really low and it was ice cold. But I overheard they're called RDCs in the Navy, recruit division. Yeah, but that's what they call them at boot camp, is RDCs. We don't use that term after we leave there. Those are the only ones that are called that. But I heard one of them talking. I overheard him in the office. He was not in our division, he was in another division, and I heard him laughing, talking about this little joke they played on us.
Yeah.
Well, they did that for like a long time. So our showers were, you know, just a little bit of water, and you're trying, it's ice cold, and you're trying to shower with what little bit of water you have. That was super fun. Then they did, I can't remember what it's called, it was like a whiteout, I think is what they called it. So they act like you've done something wrong. But they do it to everybody, so it didn't matter how, you know, bad you were, right? So they take everything, like literally everything. They take the mattresses and like throw them out the windows. They take everybody's skivvies and socks and shirt, everything, and they just throw it all outside. And you have a certain amount of time to put it all back together. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You can't. So then, now you're really in trouble. So then they make it rain, right? So then you have to do a million push-ups and burpees and whatever else. And so those are some of the antics.
Okay.
Another thing they did was they would say, okay, every time another RDC comes in, you have to do X amount of push-ups. And every day it was more. And we had this black guy. He thought he was pretty funny. He was pretty funny. I'll give him that. But he'd come in all the time. So we had to do so many push-ups. When I got to school afterward, I could do 6 pull-ups. And I remember one of the Marine Corps instructors, because we had Marine Corps instructors in school.
Okay.
That's who we had. He pulled me aside and he's like, that's pretty good for a female. But I have never been able to do that many again, because no one makes me do an ungodly amount of push-ups every single day. Sometimes I wish they did, but.
Yeah. Did they, in the Navy, what's their PFT like?
It's run a mile and a half. You have 2 minutes to do your push-up or your sit-ups. You know, there are different tiers. I think the max was 105 to get the top score. And then push-ups, I want to say it might have been about the same. You would get, you know, your score based on how many you could get done in that time.
So you never really did pull-ups, but the amount of push-ups that you did.
It made it so that I could do a lot of pull-ups. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
What you look forward to most is when training ended.
Yeah. It wasn't really the fun. I'm sorry. It wasn't fun. Let's just be real. It wasn't fun. But it got kind of better towards the end as they started to sort of leave you alone. The sleep deprivation was rough. I remember sometimes I go to the bathroom and I think I can probably just catch a quick little nap. Just put my head on the stall, right? You're just so tired. And I remember hiding in laundry just to sleep. I was like, I just need some sleep. Like, everybody's laundry.
So you were able to get some a few weeks?
Yeah, it was kind of towards the end when they started to let up a little bit. Yeah. But yeah, I was like hiding in laundry just to get some sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I never heard anybody doing that before.
Yeah, we had a few of us that did that. And then you'd have somebody, you know, watching out.
Yeah. Where was your MOS school at?
It was, and then in the Navy, it's called RATE. Is MOS, but mine was in Pensacola, Florida, which was awesome. I was so happy. I still remember I had my sea bag on my back. It was a song. I don't know if you ever heard that song, but
what was it?
There's a song talking about my sea bag on my back.
Oh,
I remember like, I was like, yes, I'm going to Florida. I was really happy to
leave. It's like a whole new world compared to
Illinois. Yeah, and then I remember just getting there and seeing the palm trees and volleyball courts, and I was pretty happy about that.
Did you get there in January or was it February?
January, but it was still nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard it's in the 70s down there.
Yeah, it was great.
So what'd you do? How long were you in MOS school?
5 months.
5 months. And you said you were an aviation electrician?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's called, for us, it's called our A school, like our initial school that we go to. You have other schools later, like maybe more advanced schools or C schools. I never hear about B schools, but yeah, that first one you go to is your A school.
Okay. Did you do any stupid stuff in that school? You say you were in the Navy. What kind of
in
stupid
school?
Stuff? Yeah.
I'm not super rebellious. But I'm just a little bit rebellious. And I got in trouble, I want to say 4 times, to where I had to do extra work every time. Like, the first time was 2 hours, the second time was 4 hours, then 6, then 8. And if I got in trouble one more time, I was going to have to go to the restricted barracks and stay there all by myself. So I think one of the times we were supposed to be playing volleyball together. And I went with somebody and we went and did something else. I just wanted to do something else. I got in trouble for that. One time I left my laundry out too long. One time I almost got in trouble because I went to Panama City. I got really drunk. Then we came back and, we ended up in a ditch at one point. I was passed out. I woke up one time, we're spinning in the median. Somehow we didn't roll. A while later, I wake up and he's having to do field sobriety tests. Then we barely make it back. I think I might have been like a
couple
minutes.
Was he drinking and driving?
He had been drinking, but we had to get back because I had curfew. So I was freaked out because I did not want to get in trouble one more time. But there was an E4 that was in there and she was like, it's okay. I got you. Because I was like, oh my gosh. And she kind of like helped me escape, be in trouble one more time. Towards the end of school, I started dating this guy. It's hard when you're in the Navy. There are guys everywhere, right? So he had already graduated and he's the one I ended up marrying the first time. Anyway, he came and he's like, hey. And I don't remember where he got the sports car. He had the sports car, I remember. And he just rolls. We're supposed to be marching back to the barracks. And he's like, hey, let's go. So I just, okay. And I left and went with him instead of marching back. So that was another time I got in trouble. You know,
do you think so when you were making those choices, were you, was it more you were absent-minded or was it like...
It was more like I just don't feel like being told what to do all the time. I just don't feel like it.
So I'm going to make this choice just so I can show that I'm
Yeah, I also got in trouble for cheating too because I, on my homework, because I was at the bar the night before with that guy and some others, but too busy doing that to get my homework done. And then I showed up in the morning and I was like, crap. So I was trying to copy off somebody else's. And I was the class leader at that time. I got caught. I got punished. I was no longer the class leader. So, you know, just like I said, lots of bad choices while I was in the Navy. I didn't have so many bad choices before or after. But while I was in the Navy, I think that's what it was. It was just this, like, stop telling me what to do or I'm just going to do something else, you know?
Well, the military is a... There's really no other place like it where you have consistent authority.
Right. And I'd never had, I'd never been told what to do like that ever. So even though I knew what I was getting into, it wasn't, it still wasn't what I mentally was prepared for, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So where'd you go after school?
I went to Whidbey Island, Washington.
You just worked on airplanes or?
Yeah. So when you first go, you have to go to the line shack. That's just because they need certain things done. And so they just put the new people there. Plus you kind of learn you're the ones out there launching and bringing them in. You're hooking up the equipment, the APU and air conditioning and stuff like that to the plane. You do have to do fuel samples and clean chains and some grunt work. So I did that at first and then went to the AE shop.
What was it like being a boot when you got to your first duty station?
Oh, what?
Did they call you a boot?
No.
They call us boots, new people.
No.
So what did they call you? Like, so did they have a nickname for you or anything?
Not really. I can't think of anything.
Did you ever make any rookie mistakes or anything?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Is there any that stand out or?
As a rookie, no. But my favorite story is when I wasn't really, I'd been in that squadron for a couple years at that point. We were in Misawa, Japan, and it was the middle of the night. It was freezing cold.
Was this a deployment from Washington?
Deployment, yeah.
Okay.
And I was working with my supervisor, and she said she wanted me to go grab the pitch and roll boxes for troubleshooting off this other plane. So I went to grab them. And one of them was missing, thank goodness. So I grabbed the pitch box or whatever, and then I was like, dun, 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 you know? And then I hadn't been there very long, and I assumed the ladder was still down, but it wasn't. They had folded it while I was on the plane, and they had the APU running. I couldn't hear them.
So explain to me what you were grabbing.
They're just some parts, that the main parts that control the autopilot.
And why was it good that one was gone?
Well, I'll tell you why.
Okay. So the ladder that you climbed up into the plane with, they had taken away.
Well, it was there, but they folded it. So instead of being at this angle, now it's like, instead of this, it's like that, right? It's just a different angle, sharper. So you can, like, the handrails are still there, you know? And I was like, dunk, dunk, dunk. Oh, and by this point, it was already too late. I was in momentum. And the reason I'm glad there was only one is because I never let go of that part. I don't know what happened, actually. So I guess somebody heard that I was up there and somebody ran over. But you can't just slide down the handrails because there are brackets, right? And it's swinging. And I don't remember what happened. But somehow I landed on my feet. Those parts are like $80,000. Okay, then they're probably $160,000
now. So you were able to use one hand that you weren't holding the second one with.
And I don't know how, it's the weirdest thing. I don't know how I made it down. You know what I mean? Because you have brackets that you would hit, right? And then it's swinging and I only have one hand. I just don't know what happened. And I remember I just stood there and I looked around. There were a lot of people working on that plane. And I was like, great. Just great. This is what everyone's going to be talking about. And I didn't say anything. I just walked off and I was kind of in shock. I was kind of shaking and stuff. And I tried to act normal, you know.
People saw it.
Oh,
happen.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So then I'm just trying to act normal. And then finally I couldn't. And I finally told my supervisor, I was like, I just fell out of the plane, like after maybe 5 or 10 minutes, because I just didn't feel right. I couldn't focus and stuff. She's like, what? And they were. I heard the guys talking about it in the locker room. And of course, they changed the story and I could hear them. like when we were getting changed at the end of the shift. And I was like, that's not how it happened. I'm trying to like talk to them in the locker room, you know, but they changed the publication to where you had to put the SAR bar, SAR stands for search and rescue, before jacking up the plane. The reason that they folded the ladder is they were going to change a tire. And that plane was built, they first started making them in 1969. They only, a lot of times, would put safety precautions in after something happened, right? And I was like, you mean to tell me I'm the first person that this has ever happened to in all these decades? Apparently, because it probably would have already been in there.
So what kind of plane was it?
The P-3 Orion, which is no longer in service. I think 2014 or so, they decommed it.
Okay. I don't know what that is. Is it a
It's a four-engine turboprop, mainly a Sub Hunter. It has seven missions, but it's...
Does it have torpedoes or something?
Mm-hmm, it can shoot torpedoes, missiles, drop bombs, and it drops sauna buoys. They ping off metal objects, right? And then they can see how far away subs are. It also has what's called a mad boom on the end. Well, I mean, we had another name for it, but I won't say it on here.
Is it what?
It's this big. Yeah. How do I describe it for people not seeing the visual? You just look it up, P3 Orion. But it stands for magnetic anomaly detector.
Okay.
And it also detects magnetic variations.
What was the nickname?
Donkey Dick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have one in the Marine Corps. It's this 5-gallon diesel container. The piece that comes off that, like, moves, you can put inside the... That's what they call that, a donkey dick.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. I've been using Isagenix since 2017. These products have made a world of difference in my quality of life, health, energy, muscle definition, strength, and endurance. My bread and butter products have been the Daily Essentials Multivitamins with Isagenesis, which is a telomere support supplement, the Isoline Meal Replacement Shake, the Tri-Release Protein Shake, the Collagen, the Green Drink, and the Cleanse for Life support system. However, Isagenix has many products and can cater to your unique lifestyle and goals. Click the link in the show notes or visit nmp.isagenix.com. Besides just using the products, there is an option to partner with me and the company to build your own business with no capital upfront. You can do as little as pay for your products and as much as making a full-time income. I love these products and will use them the rest of my life. For more information, you can email me at ghostturdstories@gmail.com. So you went back. Did you float over to Japan or did you fly?
No, we flew.
You flew. Then you went back to Washington after that deployment? And then
I went on three deployments when I was on active duty. Two to Diego Garcia, which is this little island in the Indian Ocean.
Okay.
And then it's just like south of India, south of the equator. Do you know where it's at?
Yeah. It's crazy. It's like an atoll, right? But it's almost... It's like a U-shape. Almost.
Yeah, it is. And then it got flooded really badly. And I just saw some stuff on the internet. I actually don't even know if they're using it anymore from what I saw.
What was Diego Garcia like? I looked at it on the map and it's really thin. So, I mean, walk from one side to the other? And
you could, but take you a little while.
I mean, what would it be called? The water inside the U.
The lagoon.
Outside the U. That's the ocean. So the lagoon to the ocean was how far? Walking distance?
I mean, you could. It's probably bigger than maybe it looks.
Okay.
But it was a pretty good size lagoon.
Yeah. Okay. The tropical?
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. You could rent a boat. Like a speedboat for $12. I don't remember if it was like $12 an hour or $12 for, I don't know. I remember it was just dirt cheap.
What were some of your favorite parts about being in the Navy?
One really cool thing that happened at boot camp was it was icy and we were marching and the guy in front of me slipped backwards. Like the two of us that were behind him, we just both stuck our arms out and caught him in his arms. Like nothing. And then we just like threw him back into position. We didn't say anything. We just did it. It's like we were kind of operating as one. And then he was able to just keep marching. I'm sure he probably thought he was going to eat it, and then he didn't. And then he turned around and he was like, thank you. You know, and just, it was cool.
So the platoon was co-ed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. But I was in a special one because I had a degree. I had an associate degree, but if you had a degree, or because I went in as an E3, not an E1, or if you had musical talent or there were some other things and you could be in the ceremony at the end, you were in the co-ed. But if not, you typically, most people were not co-ed, but that's why we were. And we didn't have to serve. I want to say it was Hell Week, I think is what they call it. And you had to serve in the kitchen all week, but we didn't have to. We just practiced for it's called pass and review at the end when you graduate, because we were part of the ceremony and orchestrating that. So that was way better than having to sit there and give food all day for 12 hours. So
I did mess week and it was awful.
Mess week. I couldn't remember. It's been so long.
Yeah, it was awful. It might as well have been Hell Week.
Right?
After 5 years, were you E5?
I can't remember if I made it as when I was on active duty or when I was a reserve. No, I think I was. Okay. I think I left active duty as an E5. And then I have to go back and look, honestly. Like, that's I don't think... You know how some people leave the military and they think about it for the rest of their lives? I did for several years, but now it's been years. And so I don't think about it all the time. But I was up for... I made E6 after 7 years, which was really good. And then I was up for chief, because you have to wait several years. I was up for chief when I got kicked out. That one was not really my fault, honestly.
You got kicked out?
Yes, it was really not my fault, though. By this time, I was not making bad choices. I had actually been Sailor of the Year 3 times, and I was usually the top. They changed it. Sometimes they call it PRT, sometimes PFA for the fitness assessment. But I was usually on the top. I had my name on the plaque, and I got my wings as an E4, which almost no one did. I got all these qualifications. I actually really excelled. Once I got past my rebellion in the first, you know, like boot camp and A school, once I got past that, I actually did really well. But what happened there, that's that other story.
This is at year 12?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was a reservist. And there was a chief, so he was full-time. He was active duty. I was just a reservist.
In Vegas? Okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
The unit that I was in charge of, everybody was complaining because they weren't getting paid. And then I wasn't getting paid either. Like, when we'd go on orders, maybe like do our 2 weeks, right? And I think they might not have even been getting paid for their drill weekends. But I'd be like, hey, what's going on with the pay? And he'd be like, oh, the civilians in San Diego, this and that. And he always had a story. It sounded legit because I know how government workers can be pretty, you know, not get stuff done. They should. And then one day he goes, okay, I got it all fixed. Everybody's going to get paid. And I gave you a little extra because it took so long. And I was like, I mean, you shouldn't have done that. And he's like, well, if we don't spend it, we're not going to have enough next year anyway, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay.
You accepted it.
Well, it's tough because what do I do? He'd already done it.
Sure.
Do I go rat him out? That's not what we did. We didn't rat each other out. No. And that's, I didn't want to rat. I liked him. And I just kind of thought, and he, like I said, he was full time and I was just a reservist. And I was like, he's running the show.
Well, it's not surprising. There's a lot of stuff like that that goes on. Right? But
he didn't just do it with me. He did it with a lot of people. Come to find out, he was doing all kinds of fraud. And no one, I don't even know what happened to him. I mean, I guess he went to Leavenworth and no one's ever found it. But what happened, so he would mark people present for their drill weekends that weren't there. And somehow he'd siphon the money to himself. And he was just doing all kinds of fraud.
They're not here, so they're not getting paid.
But somehow he would mark them present.
Well, he would mark them present, but they weren't there. And so,
but somehow he was getting the money. I don't know how he was doing it, but he was.
So he could say they weren't here, so don't. Well, he didn't have to pay them because they didn't show up.
Well, they weren't expecting the pay anyway.
Because they didn't show up.
They didn't show up.
Okay, but he was saying they were there anyway. Got it.
Right.
Okay.
And there were two people above him. There was a senior chief. And there was an O5 that was running the show. But he was about to retire and he was always golfing or whatever. He was never there. He golfed a lot. So he didn't give two craps. I try to be careful of charismatic people because I've seen this happen a few times. People who are super charismatic, a lot of times they're up to something, but you don't notice. You end up liking them because they're really likable.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember if I would walk down the halls with him, people would be like, Chief, Chief, Chief. He was literally Mr. Popular. People loved him. He'd go pick you up from the airport if you needed it, middle of the night, whatever. He'd take everybody to breakfast and buy for everybody. And you're just thinking, he's so great. He's so wonderful. So then he didn't just do that with me. He did with other people too. He gave them, quote, extra money. So none of us routed him out because, I mean, we all did the same thing. We're like, what do? You know?
Yeah.
And you're just like, gosh, I hope nothing comes of it. Well, one day he bounced a $15 MWR check and it spurred this two-year-long NCIS investigation. So NCIS shows up and we're kind of freaking out. But I'd never really been in that kind of trouble. I mean, I'd done dumb little things like walk off and not march home or whatever, but I'd never been in trouble like that, right? So the investigator has me come in and he's like, oh, no, you're not in trouble. And he's so nice and friendly and he plays the manipulative good cop game. So I just told him what I knew. Oh my gosh, biggest mistake I could have made. I should have said, yeah, I need an attorney and not said a darn word. I later got a JAG attorney. Well, what happened was then they had captain's mast and they had a lot of people. So the Commodore from San Diego, he made the comment, heads are gonna roll, because this happened on his watch. So he wanted to make sure he made a statement. So they had captain's mast and I didn't have an attorney at that point. And I'm trying to defend myself. Good luck. I have the Commodore from San Diego and his attorney, and they're just firing at me. I didn't stand a chance. It didn't matter, right? But I did not see this coming. He goes, I recommend you for administrative separation. I remember my jaw just dropped because I still did not see that's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I had planned to stay in for 22, 24, whatever. I was going to stay in past 20.
In the reserves the whole time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to still be in the Navy, but it was kind of hard at this point in my life. So I still wanted to like keep that and just have that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still a big part of my identity. So I went in the locker room and I just lost it. I was bawling for like an hour straight. I couldn't even leave. I don't know. It's like still makes me kind of choke up because it was frustrating. Like I haven't even cared that. But until I tell the story again, it still bugs me. So I got a JAG attorney. But by this point, the damage had already been done. And he helped, but he couldn't fix it.
Did you manage to get an honorable discharge or was it?
I'd already gotten an honorable discharge from active duty.
Active duty, okay.
So it didn't really matter as far as the reserves. Then they kind of acted like, well, if you do this and that, you know, maybe you can come back. But I tried and I could see it just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So then other people got kicked out too. And I'm sure he went to Leavenworth.
This is pretty much all the Vegas unit. That was
And so, that's how that went.
So now you're a financial advisor. So
I'm a financial planner just because I don't have any of my series licenses yet.
Yeah.
But I've got someone on my team that does, so he can set up Roths and, you know, things like that and 401ks. But I'll probably get it in the next year or so. But once you get it, you've got the SEC, like, all up in your business. And
Well, thanks, Jocelyn.
Well, you're welcome.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends and family so that we can bring more joy and awareness to those struggling with suicide ideation and the families who desperately need help after the loss of someone they love to suicide.